I saw guards trying to stick their guns beneath the door for a quick shot, but they wound up being driven back by Martin's silenced pistol. "Finally," Martin said as we came up to him. "They're about to get through." "Damn," I said. "I figured they'd be firefighting longer than that." I looked around the barren tunnel. I was tired and shaking. If I were fresh, I would have no trouble with the idea of slugging it out with a bunch of guys with machine guns, provided they were all in front of me. But I was tired, and then some. The slightest wavering in concentration, and a shield would become porous and flexible. I'd be likely to take a bunch of bullets. The duster might handle most of them, but not forever, and I wasn't wearing it over my head. "Plan B," I said. "Okay, right. We need a plan B. If we only had a wheelbarrow, that would be something." Susan let out a puff of laughter, and then I turned to her, my eyes alight. "We have a great big truck," Susan said. "Then why didn't you list that among our assets?" I said in a bad British accent. "Go!" Susan vanished back down the tunnel, moving scary fast. "Martin," I said, "get behind me." He did, as I lifted my left arm and brought up a purely physical shield, and within 5 or 6 seconds, the door had lifted 2 feet off the ground and a couple of prone shooters opened up on the first thing they saw, me. I held the shield against the bullets as the door continued to rise, and they exploded into concentric circles of light spread across the front of the shield's otherwise invisible surface. The strain of holding the shield grew as more of the guards opened fire. I saw one poor fellow take a ricochet in the belly and go down, but I didn't have the time or the attention to spare to feel sorry for him. I ground my teeth and hung on to the shield as the guards kept a constant pressure on it. Then there was a roar of large engines, and Susan drove the cargo truck forward like some kind of berserk bison, charging the group of guards blocking the road out. Men screamed and sprinted, trying to avoid the truck. They made it. I didn't need Martin to tell me to move, as the truck slammed into a turn, throwing its rear end in a deadly skidding arch. We both sprinted for it in the confusion and flung ourselves up into the cargo compartment, which Susan had thoughtfully left open. One of the more alert guards tried the same trick, but Martin saw him coming, aimed the little pistol, and shot him in the leg. The man screamed and fell down as the truck picked up speed. Susan stomped the pedal flat, and metal and razor wire screamed as she drove through a section of the fencing and out onto the open valley floor. She immediately turned it toward our escape point, and the truck began to bounce and rattle as it raced away from the facility. After that, it was simple. We went back to our ascension point, drank our watered-down flying potions, and bounded up the rocky face of the valley wall like mountain goats, or possibly squirrels. Either way, it made the 80-degree incline feel about as difficult to handle as a long stairway. "Harry," Susan said, panting as we reached the top, "would you burn that truck for me?" "My pleasure," I said, and dealt with the cargo truck the same way I had the cars in the parking lot. 30 seconds later, it huffed out its own explosion, and Susan stood there nodding. "Okay," she said. "Good. Hopefully that makes it harder for them to do whatever they were going to do." "What did you find?" Martin asked. "Mayan ceremonial gear," I said. "Not focus items, but the other stuff. The props. They were on the truck to be shipped out next." Susan rustled in the nylon bag and held up a sheet of paper. "Bill of lading," she said. "Shipment number 000938, the next outgoing package after the original shipment, and it was initiated 2 days after the focus items went out." Martin narrowed his eyes, thinking. If it was going to the same place as the first shipment, it means that we can make a pretty good guess that wherever it's going, it's within 2 days' drive, I said. That gives the vampires time enough to get the first shipment, realize that something's got left out, and call in the second shipment to bring in the missing articles. Martin nodded. So, where are they? Susan was going through the contents of the bag she'd appropriated. Mexico, she said. She held up a U.S. passport, presumably falsified, since most people don't tote their passports around in manila envelopes, along with a wallet full of new-looking Mexican cash. They were planning on taking those cloaks and things to Mexico. I grunted and started walking back to the way. Martin and Susan fell in behind me. Harry, will destroying that gear ruin what they're doing? It'll inconvenience them, I said quietly, Not much more than that. The actual magic doesn't need the costumes. It's the people performing it who need them. So any replacement 60-pound cloak of parrot feathers will do. And if they want it badly enough, they can do the ritual even without replacing them. They'll know who was here, Martin said. Too many men saw us. Interior cameras might have gotten something, too. Good, I said. I want them to know. I want them to know that their safe places aren't safe. Susan made a growling sound that seemed to indicate agreement. Even Martin's mouth turned up into a chilly little smile. So, other than somewhat discomforting the sleep of some of the Red Court, what did we actually accomplish here? We know where they're going to do their ritual, Susan said. I nodded. Mexico. Well, Martin said, I suppose it's a start.